Hi YouTube, Professor Jiang here with another update. So things seem to have quieted down in the Middle East. But as I said, all sides, United States, Iran, and Israel, have committed to war. And the ceasefire, it's really a way to attempt to control the narrative. Now, as you know, the Iranians have responded to the American bombing. The Iranians notify the Americans that they would send missiles against US bases, empty US bases in Qatar. And that seemed to be the full extent of the Iranian retaliation. And Donald Trump was very pleased with this very tepid response. And many of you might be wondering, why was the Iranian response so tepid and so muted? And there's a lot of speculation online. And so what I'll do is I'll offer you my explanation. If you're fully committed to war, why would you launch such a tepid response to U.S. aggression? Well, the main reason is you want to infuriate your population. Okay, so let me explain what I mean. Livy, the Roman historian, he wrote the entire history of the Roman Republic, and he wrote about one incident where a Roman legion went off to the frontier, and the natives confronted them, and they were outnumbered, so the Roman legion built fortifications. And every day, the natives would come and taunt the Roman soldiers. And at this point, the Roman soldiers really wanted to go out and fight the natives, but their commanders refused. Their commanders ordered them to show restraint and to maintain defense. And as a result, the natives thought that the Romans were cowards. And so the taunting became worse and worse. And it became so bad that the Roman soldiers were about to mutiny. And at this point, the commanders agreed for the Roman legion to attack the natives, and the Roman legion were so angry and so infuriated and so insulted that they slaughtered the natives. So that's what's happening in Iran today. The Iranian people are clearly insulted and humiliated by this US bombing, and the Iranian government is holding them back, which even makes them more angry. And as US aggression, as Israeli aggression increases, the Iranian response will become more and more tepid, more and more mute, and thus angering the population to the extent that the population will force the Iranian regime to declare war on the United States and Israel. So that's the game plan moving forward. So I would think that over the next month, things will be a bit quiet. There's still going to be a lot of incidents. So the Chinese media is reporting that the Iranian intelligence agency has uncovered an Israeli false flag operation in the United States. So over the next couple of weeks, we will still see some news regarding the Middle East, but I expect things to stay quiet for now. So I will use this opportunity to provide you some important background as to what's going on in the Middle East. So last video, I mentioned that there are certain elements within the American Empire that want America to lose a war against Iran in the Middle East, and they want Israel to become the empire of the Middle East. And these people, these elements, are called Christian Zionists. And so I want to today explain to you what Christian Zionism is and how it fits into this war in the Middle East. So the technical term for Christian Zionism is premillennial dispensationalists. Okay, so it's a very hard term, but I'm going to explain what it means. And by the way, I will explain a lot of new terms in this video. So I will provide Wiki links and some background reading in the description below. Okay, so please check the description if you want to further your understanding of the terms I introduced today. So premillennial dispensationalism is premillennial is the understanding that when Jesus returns, he will initiate 1,000 years of peace in the world called the Messianic Age. Okay, that's why we have the term premillennial, because when Jesus returns, we will have 1,000 years of peace. Dispensationalist is the understanding that the world history is divided into certain stages. In each stage, the relationship between God and humans change. And we are now approaching the final stage, which is the full reconciliation with God through the second coming of Jesus. But for this second coming to happen, certain elements need to be in place. Okay? The first major element is that Israel needs to be reconstituted as a nation, which has already happened in 1948. Then all the Jews from around the world have to return to Israel. And then they have to destroy the Dome of the Rock, which is the third holiest site in the Islamic tradition, and build the third temple. Then there has to be a war of Gog and Magog when Israel is besieged by a fierce enemy. And then this will lead to Armageddon, which is the final battle. And at the very last minute, when all hope is lost, when Israel is about to defeat it, Jesus will return, and he will initiate the Messianic Age. He will save Israel, and he will initiate the Messianic Age. If you're a Christian, upon Jesus' return, you will be immediately sent to heaven. This is called the rapture. So that's the idea of Christian Zionism. And Christian Zionism, as I explained before, is one of the main drivers of this war in the Middle East. And if Christian Zionists have their way, then certain things will happen, okay? The most important thing that must happen is the United States send ground troops against Iran. Because as I mentioned, if the United States were to send ground troops into Iran, the American Empire would fall, and which will give birth to the Empire of Israel. This is important because in the Christian Zionist framework, America is not involved in this prophecy. So you need to take America out of this equation somehow. Okay, so that's the first thing that must happen. Second thing that must happen is the Dome of the Rock must be destroyed. If the Dome of the Rock were destroyed, the Jews could rebuild the Third Temple. But more importantly, it would unify the Islamic world against Israel, thus initiating the War of Gog and Magog. Another thing that must happen is the Jews must return to Israel. And right now, most Jews are living very nice lives in the Western world. So why would they want to return to Israel? Well, the answer is America has been defeated in Iran, and Americans are pissed about this loss. And so who do they blame? Who do they persecute? Who would be the scapegoats? And so you have this global surge of anti-Semitism. And so now you have major Jewish intellectuals coming out and say, listen, we should all return to Israel because that's where we'll most be safe. Okay, so if I'm correct in believing that Christian Zionism is a very powerful force in the world, then these three things will happen over the next few years. A U.S. ground invasion of Iran, the Dome of the Rock will be destroyed somehow, I don't know how, and the third thing is a movement to return Jews to Israel. So why is Christian Zionism so strong? Well, what I will show you today is Christian Zionism is embedded into the very foundations of the Anglo-American Empire. It's been there since the beginning. And it's been there since the beginning thanks to the contributions of one man, Isaac Newton. So let me tell you about Isaac Newton, and then you will better understand how Christian Zionism came to being and how it influenced the Anglo-American Empire. Isaac Newton, as you know, was probably the most brilliant man who ever lived. He was an extraordinary man who lived an extraordinary life. He was born into a common family. His family was not nobility, not royalty, very common. His father died when he was very young, and his mother remarried and essentially abandoned Newton. But Newton was an extremely gifted student, and he eventually got a scholarship to study at Cambridge University, where he began to make the major contributions to the development of science. He made major contributions to optics. He invented calculus. He discovered the three laws of planetary motion, which proved conclusively, once and for all, that our solar system was heliocentric as opposed to geocentric. In many ways, Newton embodied the scientific revolution. When he died, he was given a state funeral. Only the second person in British history at that time who was non-royalty to be given a state funeral. And he was one of the only scientists to be given a state funeral. And even today, the British remember Isaac Newton as the most brilliant Englishman who ever lived. But there are three things that you may not know about Isaac Newton. And once I explain these three things, then you have a much more complete understanding of this brilliant man. The first thing that you probably don't know about him is that he was fascinated by the occult. He was a major practitioner of the occult, mainly alchemy. Newton spent most of his life in search of the Philosopher's Stone, because the Philosopher's Stone promised the elixir of immortality, which would grant immortality. It also promised to turn lead into gold. And Newton was positive that it existed, so he spent most of his life in search of it. And we know about this because in the 1930s, the economist John Maynard Keynes, he bought Newton's papers at an auction, and he really believed that within these papers, he would discover mathematical secrets of the universe. Instead, what he discovered was all this religious gibberish from Newton. Newton spent most of his life studying the Bible and trying to figure out the divine messages embedded in the Bible. So if you were to ask Newton, like, what is your profession? Newton would never say he was a scientist or a philosopher. He would say, first and foremost, he was a theologian. He was most interested in discovering the mind of God. And that's why he developed his mathematical and physical systems, in order to better decipher the mind of God. Okay, so let me give you an example of this. At this time in history, most Christians understood that history was theological. Theological comes from the Greek telos, which means purpose. So history is moving towards the end, which is second coming of Christ. Newton's great insight was to understand that if history is indeed theological, then it has structure and order, and therefore it can be expressed mathematically. And so if you can figure out the mathematical underpinnings of the world, then you've proven that history is theological, and therefore you've proven that God exists. Newton's three laws of motions, right? Let's summarize Newton's three laws of motions. Law number one, things that are at rest stay at rest. Number two, force equals mass times acceleration. Number three, for every action, there must be an equal reaction, okay? So what people don't understand is these three laws are not physical laws. They are first and foremost an ontological argument which proves the existence of God. So the first law, things that are at rest must stay at rest. Okay, so we can imagine that at the beginning of time, everything was at rest. If everything's at rest, it can't move by itself, according to the first law. Therefore, something must have moved things to put things in motion. And this is what Aristotle calls the prime mover. Second and third law implies that there's a structure and order and purpose to the universe. And who designed this structure, order, and purpose? It must be God. Okay. So what's interesting is that these three laws of motion, they prove that God exists. But much more importantly, they are the basis for a new religious movement called deism. And deism is important because deism is the main religion of the founding fathers of America. Okay? So, having proven that God, in fact, does exist, Newton's next step is, what does God want? What is God's purpose? Well, for him, it was easy. To understand God's purpose, read the Bible. So, Newton would spend decades reading the Bible, and trying to imagine its mathematical underpinnings. For him, every sentence was a mathematical formula. And he was trying to take the Bible and compare and contrast it with history. And he wrote a book. It was not published in his lifetime, but it was published after his death. It was called Observations Upon the Prophecies of Daniel and the Apocalypse of St. John. And it's something you have to look at, okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a link down in the description below, which will, and you can read it online for free, okay? So this is a major work, and it's a foundational text for Christian Zionism because it argues, first of all, that history is theological, that God has a purpose. And second of all, and this is really important, the Bible is literal, okay? So even though Daniel and John were different people, they both, as prophets, spoke the mind of God. They were divinely inspired, and so whatever they wrote came from God himself. So by examining their prophecies, you are deciphering God's purpose for humanity, okay? And this is the foundation for Christian Zionism. Okay, so that's the first thing you need to understand about Newton, that he was, first and foremost, a theologian and not a scientist, okay? Second thing that you must understand about Newton is that he was a member of secret societies in England at that time. Now, today, when you think of secret societies, we think of nefarious underground conspiracies. But at that time, secret societies were actually very common and very well accepted. Secret societies were platforms for men of education, of wealth, and of status to get together to engage in religious speculation outside the purview of the Anglican Church. At that time, the Anglican Church had an orthodoxy. And by law, you cannot transgress against this orthodoxy. So, for example, Newton got into a lot of trouble during his lifetime because he did not believe in the Holy Trinity. He thought that Jesus was not co-equal to God. He thought that Jesus was subordinate to God. And this was a heresy at that time. So, Newton got in a lot of trouble, but he had powerful friends, powerful backers, and so they bailed him out from the church authorities. These secret societies were a platform for people to discuss religious matters. They also had their origins from the Knights Templars. The Knights Templars during the Crusades were in Jerusalem, and because they were in Jerusalem, they could engage in world religions like Zoroastrianism, like Islam, like Judaism, like paganism. And as such, because these were extremely well-educated men with deep intellectual curiosity, they collected all the secret teachings that they were exposed to in Jerusalem, and they brought it back to them in Europe. And so they ran afoul of the Catholic Church, which outlawed them eventually. But their teachings went underground, and they became embedded in these secret societies. Okay, so When Newton joined the secret societies, and when he was able to discover the laws of the universe, well, I imagine that these men celebrate Newton as a prophet, as a Messiah, as a chosen one, as someone who would reveal the secret teachings of God to the world. And because the world was not ready for these teachings, then they would make it their mission to keep it secret and wait for the day when they could reveal these teachings to the world. So Newton's teachings that God has a purpose, and this purpose is literally embedded into the Bible, and this purpose will lead to the second coming of Christ. It now becomes the framework for these secret societies. And as they spread to America, it becomes embedded in the secret societies of America as well. And guess who are members of these secret societies? The founding fathers of America, right? So that's the second thing you need to know about Newton, that he was a member of these secret societies who celebrated him and who treated his theological understandings as the word of God, okay? And the third thing that you have to understand about Newton is for 30 years, he was master of the Royal Mint. And his purpose was to maintain the sanctity, the value, and the credibility of royal coinage against counterfeiters. And so to deal with counterfeiters, he set up a network of spies to identify these counterfeiters, sometimes to torture them for information, and for the most egregious offenders, they would be executed, okay? So in other words, Newton established England's very first intelligence agency, intelligence apparatus. In 1865, the United States Treasury Department established a Secret Service. What's their job? The job was to identify counterfeiters. Why were they called a Secret Service? Because the Treasury Department didn't want people to know they existed. Because if they existed, it meant that counterfeiting was a huge problem in America, which it was at that time, which it still is today. And so that would undermine the credibility of the currency. Okay? So Newton had his own intelligence agency. So in many ways, Newton built the foundations of the British Empire, which eventually became the Anglo-American Empire, which controls the world today. And so let's summarize, and I'll give you three takeaways from today's talk I want you to remember, okay? The first takeaway is, because Isaac Newton saw himself as a prophet, because he was convinced that only through divine favor could he arise from being a poor, abandoned child to becoming one of the leading intellectuals of British society, the leading scientist of British society. It could only be through divine favor. Then he had a mission to spread God's message. And that message will become the foundations of Christian Zionism. So Christian Zionism is embedded into the very fabric, the very foundation of the Anglo-American Empire. Okay, that's the first major takeaway. Second major takeaway is Israel is a creation of the Anglo-American Empire. Zionism is a creation of Christian Zionism, which leads us to the third takeaway. Judaism and Zionism are not the same thing. Christian Zionism and Judaism are in fundamental conflict. Let me explain why. The people who are most opposed to the creation of the state of Israel are Orthodox Jews, because in their tradition, in their religion, the plan is for God to send a Messiah, the anointed one, who will lead the Jewish people. And this Messiah will bring the Jews back to the promised land, create the nation of Israel, build the third temple, and create the Messianic age. Okay? The Jews don't know who this Messiah is. and they don't know when it will come, and so they must be patient, have faith in God. Christian Zionism is an attempt to manipulate history, manipulate God, to force the second coming of Jesus. In the mind of Christian Zionists, if the nation of Israel is reconstituted, if all the Jews return to Israel, if the third temple is built, if there's a war of Gog and Magog, then Jesus is forced to return. They will force the hand of God and create the Messianic age. So for Orthodox Jews, this is a blasphemy. This is counterfeiting. This is stealing their religion. And that's why Orthodox Jews are most opposed to the state of Israel. So I know this was an extremely controversial, very confusing talk. So what I'll do again is I will, in the description below, put all the links and the references you will need to truly understand Christian Zionism. So please look at Newton's book, Prophecies Upon, Observations Upon the Prophecies of Daniel and the Apocalypse of St. John. Please look at the Scofield Bible, which frames the Bible in the lens of Christian Zionism. And please look at wiki entries for Christian Zionism, premillennial dispensationalism, Newton. Okay, so if you really want to understand what's going on in the Middle East, then you really need to get a good handle on these ideas. I'm sure this talk has raised a lot of questions for you. Some of you are like, why is Christian Zionism so powerful? Some of you may disagree and say, what's driving this war in the Middle East is not Christian Zionism, it's international finance, it's the City of London, it's the Great Reset, it's American Empire, okay? So what I will do in my next talk is explain to you, these things are not mutually exclusive. They're all one thing. And you can make the argument that they are one big conspiracy. And the only people who don't know that this is a great conspiracy are the conspirators themselves, okay? In my next talk, I will use game theory to explain to you what's going on. And when I do, then things will be extremely clear to you as to why Christian Zionism is able to drive the history of the Middle East, okay? What I'll also show you next in my next talk is that Christian Zionism, what's happening in the Middle East, it's happened before and it will happen again, okay? So 1,500 years ago in the Middle East, it seemed as though biblical prophecy was about to be fulfilled. The world was at war against each other. Empires were fighting over Jerusalem and the millions were dying. The world seemed to be ending. It really seemed the end of history. And at this time, the Jews were praying for the Messiah. And they really believed the Messiah had come to them. Okay, a man came and they really believed he was the anointed one. And he was able to rally not just the Jews, but everyone around him. He was so charismatic. And it really seemed as though the Messianic age would come. And these Jews were willing to die for him. That's how much they believed in him. This man's name, well, actually, we don't know this man's name. But today, we refer to this man as Mohammed, okay? Mohammed was the Messiah of the Jews. So in my next video, I will explain to you how this came about. Just a quick announcement. I want to thank everyone for subscribing to my channel. I'm really flattered by all the attention, but I'm not really set up for this. This summer, I brought my two kids back to Toronto, and I And every day I'm from like 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. I take them outside to play. So I really don't have that much time to make these videos. But at the same time, I want to do the best possible job in presenting really interesting perspectives to you about what's going on in the world today. If you spend the time to watch my videos, then I have an obligation to make sure these videos are insightful for you. I'm gonna need more time to spend on these videos. I'm sorry, but I might have to take a pause for about 2 weeks in order to really delve deep into the research necessary in order to create the next video. But if this war in the Middle East breaks out again for whatever reason, I don't think it will, but if it breaks out for whatever reason, then rest assured I will make a video helping you analyze what's going on. And giving you some insight as to why this is happening and where things might be going. Okay, so thanks so much for watching. I really appreciate it, and I will see you next time.